a sinfonia by Bach with the Empire Brass and organist Douglas Major.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn, broadcasting out of Henry Ford Community College, and thank you for tuning in to this beautiful classical programming. We appreciate your continued support of WHFR, and if you would like to learn more about some of the events and activities going on through our radio station, our public non-commercial radio station, we would love to put you on our WHFR loyal listener mailing list. It is free of charge, and it's a bi-monthly publication that gives you the latest of places we're going to be, different show changes, schedule of events, that kind of thing. Simply give me a call, Susan McGraw, WHFR General Manager, 313-845-9842. That's 313-845-9842. Just as simple as that. Wouldn't you like to become a WHFR loyal listener? Well, you probably already are, but now let's make it official with the WHFR free loyal listener mailing list.
It's called the Tchaikovsky Concerto.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn, non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is a motion picture producer, James Fox. Mr. Fox is the executive producer of Quick Fox Productions. He was a UFO skeptic until 1993 when he began investigating the evidence, which quickly made a believer out of him. His first documentary on the subject was UFOs, 50 Years of Denial, in 1998 for the Discovery Channel. The success of that movie led him to travel around the world for 4 years in pursuit of further evidence. The result was Out of the Blue, where James interviewed witnesses including President Gerald Ford, Mercury astronaut Gordon Cooper, five-star Admiral Lord Hill Norton, and many others. And his new documentary is Beyond the Blue, and it's soon to be released. Mr. Fox has been interviewed on numerous radio and TV shows, including several appearances on Larry King Live. And we're very fortunate to have him with us on the line today. Welcome to the show, Mr. Fox.
It's a pleasure to be on the show.
You were a skeptic before 1993, is that right?
I was so skeptical that had anyone even mentioned the word UFO, they would be immediately dismissed. I remember a very dear friend of mine saying that her previous boyfriend was interested in UFOs, and I remember it was just like a knee-jerk response. The guy's got to be a quack. I mean, honestly, it was that quick. I didn't even ask her one question. Right. And then never asked her a question about it again, quite honestly. So, but then I had a little something unusual that I witnessed in the night sky, and that sort of triggered my interest. Of course, my own family thought I was nuts.
Tell us about that.
My father's a mainstream journalist. His name's Charles Fox. He's written for pretty much every publication on the newsstand. You know, and he was very concerned about my interest in the phenomenon, and he kept saying, you know, you're wasting your life, and there's nothing to this, and And I said, well, you know, I think otherwise. And I continued my pursuit. When I interviewed Mercury astronaut Gordon Cooper, my father came with me because he was a iconic figure in my dad's, growing up.
Right.
And so that was kind of a turning point for him, I think, when he heard what Cooper said about the a couple of incidences.
Right.
Yeah. Now he's 100% behind me.
Right. I have planned for the next month's show a little clip from Gordon Cooper. I don't have the clip right here right now, but I'd play it. But basically, you tell us basically what did astronaut Gordon Cooper have to say about the UFO phenomena?
Well, he was stationed at Edwards Air Force Base in the early 50s, and they were supervising the testing, a new testing facility for F-86 fighter jets.
Mm-hmm.
So they were filming the whole operation. I believe he said it was 16-millimeter film footage. And suddenly, out of nowhere, this disc, double lenticular, I'm just trying to quote him here, double lenticular disc-shaped object came into frame and landed right there on the dry lake bed at Edwards Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm.
They filmed it, and I think they said they started to approach it, and it lifted back up off the ground, and he said it had three landing pods that retracted into the belly of the craft, and then he said it just shot off almost in the blink of an eye. The film footage was developed. He didn't have a chance to run the film. This is what he told me directly. He didn't have. And I also have him saying all this on camera. He didn't have a chance to run the film, but he held up the light after it developed. It was good film. He saw the craft on there on the dry lake bed. And the film footage was flown by carrier plane directly to Washington. It was never seen or heard from ever again.
Right. Yes, that kind of film has a way of falling through the cracks then, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that was the only time I saw him get really irritated. I said, did you ever follow up on what happened to that film footage? And he really kind of snapped at me.
Hmm.
He'd never really, you know, during the whole interview, he'd maintained a pretty even-keeled, you know, composure. But when I brought that up, I could tell I hit a nerve.
Hmm.
And, he said, how am I, you know, what am I supposed to do? I was following orders.
Right. That's right. He was following orders.
I've heard that. I can't even tell you the amount of times I've heard that from military guys from all over the company. You know, this sort of this agency that apparently we're not investigating UFOs since the termination of Project Blue Book comes in and sanitizes the whole thing and orders everyone not to talk about it and disappears.
And what year was this that this happened?
That was in 52, 53, but I don't know exactly, but it's in the early 50s.
Okay, but Cooper had also another experience where he, pilot, where he chased UFOs, eh?
Over Germany, yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't actually include that. I have that footage, actually, from the interview.
No.
But he said they would trail them, and they would fly in formation. There was a lot of activity in the 50s.
Oh,
you remember
yeah.
The White House being buzzed in 52?
Right, right.
That was captured on radar and photographed. And,
right.
They scrambled jets, and it was pretty intense.
Right. Now, but what about your particular experience? You had personal experience that kind of turned you around, didn't you?
Well, you know, I would say it was a little more ambiguous than something like what we just discussed
okay.
with Gordon Cooper. However, it did trigger my interest because
mm-hmm.
I saw something that that had the ability to hover in the night sky.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
What was it?
Hover in the night sky and when it took off, it just took off. It didn't make any sound. I actually videotaped it.
Oh, really?
I was with five other people, and but you know, somewhat inconclusive in terms of the video because there's no points of references at night. And as I always try to explain to people, if you ever take a video camera out at night, a video camera, not a film,
mm-hmm.
but a video camera out at night to film an object in the night sky, you'll find it kind of difficult to locate the object depending on how big it is. Because the viewfinder on a video camera emits light, so it's like having a low light directed into your eyeball. So
right,
people kind of closes. Anyway, it makes it difficult to find.
Right.
And
yeah.
so, but we did have the footage analyzed. I was on the Today Show as a result of it.
Mm.
And you know, you couldn't hear a thing. And that, like I said, that just triggered my interest. And that's not. I don't base my belief on my personal experience.
Yeah, it could have been a lot of different things, but the way it the way it maneuvered, the way it did not sound, mm-hmm. I should say.
It was totally unconventional, yes.
Right, totally unconventional, right. Now, you're talking also about other videos. When you were on the Larry King show last, our neighborhood skeptic, Bill Nye, the science guy.
Yeah.
He likes to bill himself as Bill Nye, the science guy, with the bow tie.
Right.
But not making fun of him or anything, but just making fun of some of the things he said. As he's talking, as all of you are talking, in one side of the screen, there are pictures of UFOs from all around the world. I mean, good quality pictures where you can see is not a light in the sky. You can see it's a structured craft. And this guy is saying, how come all of the pictures of UFOs are all fuzzy and blurry and not good pictures? Don't you guys have a monitor there?
You know, it's amazing to me that that argument's still being used today. Yeah. I mean, you remember as early as 1950, McMinnville, Oregon, the Trents, Paul Trent and his wife.
Right.
Those photographs have been now analyzed by scrutinized scientifically for 50, 60 years now.
And very clear. The object's very clear.
And it's crystal clear. Yeah. Broad daylight, points of reference, multiple. I think three shots were taken, two witnesses.
Right.
They've maintained their story for 50 years.
Right. They're past now,
there's been
I think.
No photographic trickery of any kind ever found by any of the scientists, including the Condon Committee.
Right.
Almost 60 years ago. So, I mean, there's been lots of photographs, but remember, there's been a lot of, my personal belief has been there's been so much effort to obfuscate or muddy the waters with disinformation.
Right.
And, you know, hoaxers and stuff like that, that I think that people are reluctant to kind of jump into the sewer, so to speak,
right.
to sift through it and look for the real 5-10% stuff that remains inexplicable.
Right. There was a guy that I know that was checking out investigating a crop formation here in Michigan once, and as they were there, they decided it was a genuine crop formation. As they were there, somebody said, oh, there's another crop formation down the road, you know, a mile down the road. They went right over there and to find it was a man-made crop formation. Now, it kind of makes me believe that as soon as a genuine crop formation or a genuine case, genuine sighting presents itself, someone, quote unquote, will rush in to plant a hoax near it, so that people, and then they'll prove it's a hoax, and people throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. You know what I'm saying? Am I correct on this?
Oh, there's no. I mean, I've only looked peripherally into the crop circle phenomenon, and I was impressed at what I saw.
Mm.
I was in England, actually doing something with Out of the Blue.
Mm.
And I happened to be in Salisbury, England, when one of those amazing formations was created.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually talked to the farmer who, you know, he said, oh, I went out to refill my, put petrol in my tractor, and when I got back, you know, it's like there's a football field size formation in his yard. He said it was, you know, I mean, it was done with laser precision.
Right. And how long?
And so that kind of sold me right there, you know, yeah. having seen one and met. But I haven't. I don't have extensive knowledge on that. Other than I know that it's fairly easy for the people who've looked into it to determine the fakes from the real.
Right. Yeah. Are you familiar with W.C. Levengood?
Heard of him.
Yeah. Okay. He lives here in Michigan, and kind of a friend of mine, and. He's shown me he's shown the world. In fact, the world follows his standard of checking these crop formations out. The nodes are longer in wheat formations. They're bent and not broken.
Yep.
And just dozens of things that you can just walk out in the field within 5-10 minutes. You can tell pretty much if it was man-made. And
yeah.
You know,
I mean, these things were folded, not creased or bent.
Right.
They were folded down, and I remember it being with a blade of grass in precision. It was just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as opposed to Doug and Dave getting out there with their little you know, pogo stick and a couple of ropes.
Right. And they must have had some kind of a microwave on their back or something, because there was microwave energy. And you know what the strange part is? In a genuine crop formation, you can go into the circle. Let's say, for the sake of figures, it's 50 feet above sea level on the flat ground. That's all flat field, right?
Right.
You have a GPS, and you can go all around that that circle, and your GPS tells you it's 50 feet above sea level. You go into the circle, that thing goes nuts. It may be 100 feet above, another position 100 feet below sea level. 100 feet below sea level, and you're standing in the same field, you know? So there are some really strange things that cannot be explained. So
when did you get interested in the UFO phenomenon?
Actually, when I was 14 years old.
Wow.
When one parked over my head for 15 minutes in the presence of my whole family, hundreds of people in Michigan, and this thing, now folks, he's interviewing me. I love this guy. I will show up in his next movie. Anyway, I looked out the window. I'm 14 years old. I'm going off to bed, right? Make a long story short. Perfectly clear sky, 11 o'clock at night. And I look up, and there's this one little pinhole in the sky, well within our atmosphere, maybe 500 feet in the air. And this green smoke is billowing out of it. I said, "Mom, the sky is green." My dad said, "Go to bed, David." I said, "No, the sky is green." And she came in, she looked up, and next thing you know, we're out in the front lawn. And the smoke comes billowing out of this one point of the sky, and a solid craft emerged from that hole in the sky. Now you hear the sky opened. You know that phrase, the sky opened, and the gods came through or whatever. And this craft was as big as a city block.
Wow.
With huge, round, stadium-sized floodlights of various colors that weren't FAA standard, and parked over our neighborhood for 15 minutes.
Wow.
My father didn't know what it was. And the funny thing now is we think back, we're standing right under this thing. You know, why weren't we afraid it was going to fall on top of us? We couldn't hear a sound, you know? So there was no engines that were holding it up.
What year are we talking?
62.
Okay, because there was a rash of UFO sightings over the state of Michigan, which led to, obviously, congressional hearings.
Right. I don't think it was at that time. But
no, it sounds a little earlier than that.
And the smoke was so thick that you could hardly detect the outline of the thing, but it was a huge, solid craft. And it parked there for 15 minutes. My mother said, "It's the second coming." So.
Wow.
Yeah, and then this little tornado of smoke off to our left comes down as if an air jet was pushing it from the other side. And the thing went up and was gone. When the smoke dissipated, it was a perfectly clear sky again. And the next day, the authorities wasted no time in letting us know that what those silly people saw was the Northern Lights.
Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah. You know, I always find the explanation is more difficult to believe than the event.
Yeah, but if you're over in California and you didn't see it, well, who are you going to believe? You know, they saw the Northern Lights. They don't know the difference between Northern Lights and a structured craft. Well, they weren't telling the people who saw it, because we know the difference. You know?
Well, you know the famous case in Bentwaters, England, 1980.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've got people out there that are trained for the deployment and security of nuclear weapons.
Right.
And here they are being told that what they were out there chasing for hours that evening was the lighthouse beacon.
Mm-hmm.
It's just absurd. I mean, they talk about the deputy base commander, the colonel,
mm-hmm.
who's in charge of all that security out there, and all of his men, who, several of whom sat with the thing on the ground.
Right.
Come on.
Right.
You know, and it's just, and then you'd think if they were out there hallucinating, according to the official statement by the Air Force, mm-hmm. why the heck would they put a bunch of people in charge of security of nuclear weapons that are out there accused of hallucinating?
You'd think they'd kick him out of the Air Force. But
I
instead,
should hope so.
Instead, they got promotions.
Yeah, they all got promoted.
That's
really interesting, don't you think?
Yeah, keep your mouth shut.
That settles real well with you.
Yeah, keep your mouth shut and we'll promote you, you know? And, of course, Larry Warren didn't keep his mouth shut. And now he's over in England again. I spoke with, Peter, the other author of the book, Left at East Gate.
Oh, Left at East Gate, yeah. That's Robin
Hooker? Yeah, I wanted to say Peter. Robin?
Littlecombe.
Yes, but I spoke to him on my show. And I'll think of it before the end of the show. And anyway, where was I going with this?
Well, you were just about the explanations. Well, he came out and he's really released a lot of.
Yeah. But you know, Larry Warren doesn't want to talk about it. I asked him for Larry Warren's information. He doesn't have a. At least I didn't get his email address, and of course not his phone number. But he gave me his home address, and I've been meaning to write to him, but I was told he does not want to speak about it. But he came to, in 2001, he came out to Disclosure Project in Washington.
Did he?
Oh, yeah, he was on the panel May 9th, 2001.
Larry Warren was?
Yes, sir.
I was there, and I you know, I'm sure I saw him if he was there, I was there. I filmed it.
The very first one they did?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, you know that there was another one that I did.
Okay.
It was separate from that in 2007.
Oh, yes. Okay, that's right.
A lot of people confuse it with the Disclosure Project. It's not part of we're not part of the Disclosure Project.
Oh, no. No, that was at the
National Press Club.
National Press Club in Washington. But the first one that the Disclosure Project did.
Yes.
Okay.
That was 2001.
21 witnesses. Larry Warren was one who spoke. And so there you are.
Well, we managed to get the colonel, Charles Halt,
right.
Deputy Base Commander,
right.
As well as, I interviewed all the primary witnesses to that event.
Mm-hmm.
Burroughs, Cabansag, mm-hmm. and Peniston
right.
all went out to investigate an alleged downed aircraft when they came upon a landed object. And I remember listening very carefully to Peniston describing, because Peniston, I mean, they all go out there to expect a prosaic explanation.
Mm.
And when Peniston was informed that the object did not crash, you know, he sort of, excuse me, can you repeat that? The object didn't crash. Well, what did it do? It landed.
It landed.
You know, apparently they got about halfway into the forest approaching this craft, and Cabansag got cold feet, so he stayed sort of between the base to operate as a relay for communications with the base, because their radios were all breaking up, and John Burroughs and Jim Peniston continued on and all the way to the craft.
Right.
Incredible story.
Yes, it is. And
because people always think of these ambiguous lights off in the distance when they talk about UFOs, but
right.
people sat with this thing on the ground.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not just what I saw. It wasn't just a dot of light going across the sky. It was a huge craft sitting just over treetop level. And when that is a close encounter where I can say, you know, I saw something that was not conventional. I'm going to have to take a break here. I'm sorry.
No problem.
I need to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves, 89.3 on your radio, WHFR.FM on your computer. And I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with Mr. James Fox, producer of Out of the Blue. And we're going to get right back to him after this short non-commercial break, so please stick around.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Dying forests, they were a tap on the shoulder. We got a finger in our chest from the rising sea level, and a sharp poke in the ribs from recent wildfires in Alaska. Then dying coral reefs and eroding coastlines pushed us hard. The drowned polar bears, that was a shove. Melting permafrost, that was a slap. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution before it's too late. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Henry Ford Community College has a lot to offer. A credit transfer guarantee, a job skills guarantee, and a tuition freeze guarantee. Henry Ford Community College fall semester classes begin Thursday, August 21st. Be sure to call 1-800-585-HFCC for registration information or check the website at hfcc.edu. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice guaranteed.
Hey, Dad.
Yeah?
You remember that ball game we went to a couple years ago?
Sure.
And how you didn't have enough cash for 2 hot dogs, so you walked with me on your shoulders until we found an ATM? And then when we got back to our seats, we never saw the hot dog guy again.
Well, I don't remember all that.
Yeah, that was an awesome game.
You never know which moments will be the ones they'll remember forever. So take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
This is WHFR.FM, the only station making waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're going to get right back to our special guest, Mr. James Fox. You've been on Larry King's show several times with Stanton Friedman and other guests, and a couple of skeptics, a couple of comedians, I like to call them.
Buzz Aldrin, too, a while ago.
Yeah, that's right, Buzz Aldrin. And he was a little standoffish about admitting what he saw, but he was a UFO witness also, wasn't he?
I believe that's the case.
Yes. And Larry King has done many of these shows on UFOs. So what do you think King's personal views are? Have you ever been able to talk to him about it?
Oh, yeah.
And?
I'll tell you. Remember that turning point I talked about with my father?
Right.
Well, that was with Mercury astronaut Gordon Cooper. And I saw something similar to that occur with Larry King. And it was on November 8th, I believe the date was, we did a show where I invited a whole slew of military witnesses on with me. Hmm. Some of them satellite fed in from all around. They kind of gave me carte blanche, actually. I mean, I did pretty much... They did everything I wanted to do. They have to have a skeptic on, so you know, we got the skeptic, but it's just the way it has to be, which is fine. I'm always up for a spirited debate. And I think it was like the second commercial break, and I think Peniston and Charles Holt were talking about this object and the flight characteristic, and I had former Governor Fife Symington sitting next to me.
Right.
And they went to commercial break, and he looked around at us, and he said, "God, this stuff's real, isn't it?" And he looked. He had this sort of look like he'd been duped, is the best way I can describe it. Like it was all coming to light. Like, and they said, "Yes, it's real. The phenomenon's real." And he said, "My God, why don't they tell us?" And everyone has their different reasons for that. And it's actually, quite honestly, now, I mean, it really does bother me that there's tangible evidence being withheld from all of us, because I think it's all of our birthright to have access, whether it's scary or not.
Why don't you think they tell us?
Well, on a small scale, I think not having control of our airspace, and that these structured craft of unknown origin can whiz around with impunity.
Right.
I think that the military just looks at it as a problem and a national security issue, A. B, if they did indeed recover something back in 1947, which the evidence indicates that's what happened,
right,
they probably don't want to share that technology with the rest of the world.
Right.
Just my, you know, I can't prove that as much as I can prove that I feel like I've got a very, very strong case to support the fact that there are these massive unidentified flying objects whizzing around in airspace that defy a prosaic explanation. But I cannot prove the origin of the occupants, nor can I prove, the event of. I mean, I would have to show up with a piece of the spacecraft for Roswell, but it's certainly a very, very strong case. I've looked into it extensively. I've interviewed a lot of the witnesses. But I'm kind of steering clear of that in my new production.
You're steering clear of what?
Of the crash recovery.
Okay.
I'm just staying focused on a more sort of conservative level to establish that the phenomenon is real and it's happening worldwide.
And yet, if it is real, now, MUFON itself used to stay away from the abduction experience because they thought it was just too far out there for people to grasp. But now that's just part of the whole phenomenon is the abduction experience. And I always say, unless they came all this way to put on an aerial show for us, they must have an agenda. And what would we do if we were able to go out there and find a planet that where there's intelligent beings yet primitive? What would we do? Well, we'd scoop up a couple of them, see how they tick, right?
Take a little tag in them, watch them.
Yeah. Now, just like we do with the animals in the jungle,
wouldn't
it be horrific to think that we are the lower animals compared to these alien beings or these extraterrestrials?
I met Travis Walton one time.
Yeah.
Fire in the Sky.
Right.
It was Snowflake, Arizona. What was that, the late 70s?
Mm-hmm.
That is just a truly remarkable case. I mean, there are a handful of, this other case in Rua, Zimbabwe, 1994.
Right, that were the kids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it 68 school children?
Something like that, yeah, a whole bunch of them.
All witnessed the object landed in broad daylight next to the schoolyard.
And communicated with them.
Yep, and I think there were two beings looking at the kids.
Mm.
And they kept saying, what was their... What did it look like they wanted? And they said, it looked like they wanted us. They were very interested in us.
Yeah.
I watched some outtakes from Dr. John Mack's interviews, and it was truly breathtaking what was said. But, I think it's very important when trying to get this story out to a much larger audience, to penetrate a much larger mainstream audience around the world. I think it's very important for us to take baby steps with it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right, that's right.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of working on UFOs 101 for the masses right now.
Right.
Even though I've gone way beyond that, but I think it's like teaching math and starting with trigonometry,
Now, you have interviewed people with O'Hare in Chicago, with that sighting, also with Arizona, the Phoenix Lights.
Extensive interviews with Arizona Phoenix Lights, yes.
Right, and Stevensville. Tell
and
us a
Stevensville,
little,
yes.
Tell us a little bit about each of those. Were the witnesses or the bulk of the witnesses seem to be credible?
Oh, God, are you kidding? I mean, everything to lose and nothing to gain. I interviewed even a constable, the local constable, police officer, and these guys, their stories are consistent. One of whom I pursued probably for about 2.5 months to get him to finally come forward was a gentleman who stood under the craft for about 3 minutes while hunting.
Right.
And, you just think, why on earth would they make this up, A, and B, reluctantly go on camera after 2.5 months of coaxing. And then the stories are consistent, and then you put together the flight path of the object. It's consistent with the times and the areas and descriptions of the craft that I know these people don't even, they knew nothing about UFOs in terms of they've had their own encounter. I've heard so many different testimonies as to the performance characteristics, the texture, all of the little details that I hear,
The texture of the craft, you mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Not the texture of the aliens.
Sorry, texture of the craft, yeah. But that Phoenix case is truly remarkable. Not one single person that I interviewed, and I interviewed a lot, and I've been there at least 8 times interviewing different witnesses, not one of them was alarmed?
Mm-mm. No.
How could you spot an object over 5,000 feet across in the shape of a massive boomerang and not be alarmed?
Well, now, alarmed is one word for it, but amazed, I think. I think I was more amazed when I saw my...
Not one of them was scared. They said it wasn't scary at all.
Right. I don't think anyone in my family was really scared. Like I say, we're standing under this thing. It's got nothing to prop it up. It's making no sound like it has propulsion to hold it up. And we weren't afraid of it falling on us. Why? You know? And after it went away, we just, and you're going to hear, I'm sure you've heard this a thousand times.
What about your business?
You just went back in the house and went to bed.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of that show, you know?
I just interviewed a woman, Terry Mansfield. She's a hospice worker. There were 15 of them sitting at the base of Squaw Peak in Phoenix, Arizona. Outside, it was a beautiful night. It's probably about a little after 8 o'clock in the evening. And they said this object was so huge, they could not see the edges in any direction, and it just slowly floated right over the top of them. It took about 3 to 4 minutes to pass overhead. They all just stood there watching it. And then they didn't even get out of their seats to see. I mean, they just went back to what they were doing. I said, you guys didn't run up the hill and look at where it went or get your cameras or anything? No, we didn't. And I think it's because, I mean, I don't know, I'm speculating here, but I think it's because there's no place to put it.
That's it. No place to put this information.
You know?
We all have these little cubby holes in our brains, and there's no little cubby hole to fit this information.
No little cubby hole to fit it, you know. And even when I interviewed Philip Corso, who claimed to have seen the bodies in Fort Riley, Texas, in 47, and he said, you know, I just put it in the back of my head and forgot about it.
Right, right. And that's why people tend to throw this information out, because we don't have it. Instead of making a little cubby hole for it, you know, here's some new information. Let's build a little cubby hole in our brains for that. They just throw it out, you know. So keep it in your gray basket, as Stanton Friedman would say.
Right. So. But it's just incredible. You know, I'm working on getting some photographic and film evidence of that Phoenix case, and I'm getting close. I'm getting close.
Yeah, we talked to Dr. Lynn Kaitai on this show. And she was an excellent witness and an excellent guest, and as is yourself. And she told us quite a bit about the Phoenix Lights.
Yeah, no, it's remarkable. I mean, I interviewed a Northwest Airlines pilot, and he said, you know, he was at a loss for words to describe the size of this thing. You just can't imagine something that big.
Right.
And he described it as floating. He didn't even say flying. He said floating.
Right. Well, I guess you could say the one I saw was floating. It floated down from that point and just sat above treetop level and hovered.
You remember that there was a little moment with Bill Nye, the science guy, on Larry King. And
with the bow tie.
Yeah, with the bow tie. And he says, I said, well, what would you do if you saw one? He goes, well, first, you know, I'd take a picture. And I said, yeah, and then what? Then I'd do this and I'd do that. I said, yeah, and then what? And then, and I said, yeah, and then everyone would laugh at you and no one would believe you.
Because, that's it.
You know what I mean?
People they would never tell anybody.
No, a lot of times, you know, you listen to these people and it's like, hey, look, I think it's very, very healthy to be skeptical. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah, I am too.
But don't categorically dismiss something just because you can't explain it.
Right. No, people think you're going to look silly, and oh my goodness, we're not, especially if you're in science, we're not going to get this grant, or they're going to pull our grant from us for sure. And, you know, we've got our, you know, and that's like SETI. You know, this guy,
Seth Shostak.
Yeah. He knows this is real. He even admits, oh, I think there are people out there, or I think there's some kind of form of life out there. I just don't think there's no proof that they're here. So we have to, you know, you're out there with sending out radio waves. Well, this is assuming that they have the same technology. They're on the same technological level that we are. Otherwise, if they're below us, they don't even know about radio waves. If they're way above us, which I believe they are, then radio waves would be like trying to pick up smoke signals on your cell phone to them.
Way above us. I like that. It's a good title for my movie.
Way above us.
No, I'm looking for a title. If there's any listeners out there that come up with a good title, I don't want it to indicate flying saucers or alien beings or anything like that. I want it to be kind of more discreet than that.
Right. I will be in the credits, though, won't I?
Absolutely. Way above us. I like that.
Way
I really
above
do.
Us.
Way above
far
us.
Above us. We'll work on this. This is a working title, James.
Beyond the Blue is a working title, too.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sold on it yet.
Out of the Blue is a working title?
Love Out of the Blue. No, that's a done title for my previous film.
Oh, no, you say Beyond the Blue.
Beyond the Blue is my new film, which is coming out, which is much more cinematic.
As soon as we come back from this break, we're going to talk all about Beyond the Blue, because I want to know about this, okay?
Oh, I'm dying to tell you.
And I'm telling you, I have seen Out of the Blue, and you say there's an updated version. Why don't you tell me about that and where people can go to check this out further. But I'm going to tell you right now, and not just because you're the guest on the show right now, not trying to blow wind up your skirts or anything, but Out of the Blue is the most comprehensive documentary on UFOs I've ever seen. So you're going to have your work cut out for you if you're going to do a better job than that.
Oh, well, thank you so much. So, I do have it cut out for me, believe me.
But very comprehensive. But I need to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves, and I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with motion picture producer Mr. James Fox. We're going to get right back to him in a moment, but right after this break.
Every Saturday at 10 a.m., tune in to one of our special forum shows on WHFR. Forum shows are locally produced talk shows on alternative topics not available elsewhere in Detroit radio. If you miss one of your favorite talk shows on WHFR, go to our website at WHFR.FM. Look for the forum podcast link and click. Forum shows are now available to be downloaded anytime after broadcast. So remember to tune in every Saturday at 10 a.m. for one of our forum shows. And if you miss your favorite talk show, go to the website at WHFR.FM. Are you a pet lover? If the answer is yes, then be sure to tune in to Pet Lovers Lane, located at 89.3 on your FM dial, WHFR Dearborn. I'm Susan Morrell, and I'll be your host. Pet Lovers Lane is a news, information, and talk show about pets, for pet lovers, and for pets. Please join me on the second Saturday of every month, right here on WHFR, the station making waves at 10 a.m. Just tune in, and you'll hear a fabulous show for you and your pet.
This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm David Twitchell, listening to We Are Not Alone. And we're speaking with the movie producer, Out of the Blue producer, James Fox, and also Beyond the Blue producer, James Fox. And when are we going to get a chance to see this Beyond the Blue, or whatever the title you decide to make it?
I had to call it something, right?
when you finally get it done, I want you to let me know, because I'm going to tell our listeners what the actual title is and what to look for.
I know. I'm hoping one of these days soon it's going to come to me, because I don't want to finish the movie and not have a title for it. You know what I mean?
Far above us, way above us. Call that.
Wait, you said way above us, right?
I don't know. Work with what you want.
I like that.
I get credit for either one, you know.
I wanted something, you know, that doesn't scream flying saucer, UFO, alien, right, anything of the sort.
Yeah.
That's why I loved Out of the Blue, but unfortunately I can't call it Out of the Blue.
No.
Because it's not Out of the Blue. No. But we are setting our sights as high as we could possibly set them.
Mm.
We're trying to get this one in movie theaters worldwide.
Okay.
So it's never been done before, and it's extremely challenging. Had we just done a production like we did with Out of the Blue, we could have ended up, you know, maybe selling it to HBO and putting it on television and done the rounds that way. But like I said, we want a theatrical release on this, and so it has to have another notch up than a television production, obviously. So all the people that have been involved with this, of course, the stakes are a little higher, and the money raising has been a bit more challenging than previous productions.
Right.
But I think, you know, if we pull it off, it'll all be well worthwhile.
Right.
So right now we have an 80-minute rough cut done, and it's pretty good. And we're getting a new editor on board, and all the editors actually involved with this production. As a matter of fact, all the people involved with this production are not in any way associated with the UFO phenomenon.
Okay.
Which I think is good.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, it's difficult for someone like myself to create a body of evidence. I'm so familiar with it, you know. But these people aren't. And so anytime there's a conflict or something that is problematic, they bring it up with me and say, you know, well, I don't know about this, so I need to hear more, or I need to, or, you know, it needs to have more of a storyline.
Right.
Which is what we've done is, and tell me if I'm rambling on too much here, but we've...
No, I want to hear it.
We've created a whole narrative with this, so it's a journey that the viewer goes on.
Right.
Whereas before, with Out of the Blue, which is a great film, I'm very, very proud of it, it's a series of very compelling cases from around the world, but there's no real story to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this has a story. This is all linked, and it's kind of my journey.
Well, it's good that you have people like that that are not associated, because, you know, otherwise you'd be preaching to the choir, so to speak. I try to ask questions of my guests that I think a skeptic listening to the show would ask.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I know I may know the answer, but I want you to tell them, and I want them to know. I want them to know that answer, because they're going to ask that question. And I think that's what these people involved with your movie are going to do. They're going to say, well, let's look at it another way, and fine, then look at it the other way and show them, you know.
We're trying to be prepared, as best prepared, because we know we're going to be under fire if we succeed at doing this. And when we succeed, I should say, because we're going to keep pushing until it does get in theaters. We've got a great team of people behind us.
Mm-hmm.
On this one, very, very fortunate. And a lot of people, you know, eagerly anticipate, including myself, by the way.
Right.
It's release.
Right. I certainly am.
I certainly am. But if you want, we can talk briefly about the revamped version of Out of the Blue. It's actually rather interesting how it all went down.
Yeah.
The first version was completed in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
We sold it to Universal, Sci-Fi broadcast it. It got some good publicity. It did fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
Then a couple of years later, I think it was 2006, I got a letter from the Universal, actually, and they say, well, we're not going to renew our broadcast option, which I didn't think they would anyway. So, but it sort of reminded me that I own it again. So I thought, well, I'd like to revamp it, revisit it, and do some things that I kind of ran out of steam with before.
Okay.
So I set out to get 10 interviews. The 10th person was Clinton. And I got 9 out of the 10. The 9th person was former Arizona two-term governor Fife Symington,
mm-hmm.
who was the infamous governor that had one of his aides dressed up in an alien suit,
right,
and made a mockery out of the whole 1997 sighting.
Right.
Which he, coincidentally, he's good friends with Bill Clinton. I don't know if you knew that.
No.
He saved Bill Clinton from drowning back in college.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they've been friends ever since.
I guess.
Yeah, and he ran into a little something sticky during his second term. And he was pardoned, given a preemptive pardon by Bill Clinton.
Hmm.
Funny enough. But in any case, so, you know, we revamped Out of the Blue, and I think it took about a year, maybe a little over a year. It was a lot of work, actually. It's a lot more than I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And did some graphics. We put it all in 16:9 format. And, I got invited on Larry King, I think that's about a year ago. Mm-hmm. About a year ago. And I thought, great, I'll make a sale and I'll move on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the people took a look at it. They said, this is an amazing film, but I think you could do a lot better. I think you could put this thing in movie theaters. Mm-hmm. Well, what's that going to take? Well, I think you need to go out around the world again and do more filming and more. I said, wait a minute, I just did that. So, but I figured, hey, you know, I had a good shot at it, and my two other co-producers were exhausted at that point, so I had to buy them out, had to get additional people involved, mm-hmm. and that was the birth of Beyond the Blue.
Well, you know, I'm retired.
Are you?
I'm retired. I still do the show and everything, but... as far as everyday work, no, I'm kidding. Right? Just wanted you to know that option's open. And although I was a consultant for UFO Hunters on History Channel for one of the shows, and didn't do a lot for them, but it was a paying job. So
I'm flying to Europe with them next at the end of the month.
Oh. Mention my name, they'll kick you out of the plane, I think. Just kidding.
I know, a lot of people said, oh, you can't do that. You know, I don't believe in the UFO hunters. And I said, well, you know what, I'll do my best. I'm just going to participate on a couple of shows, and I'll do my best to influence them and make the story as good as it could be.
Who said don't believe them? They're very scientific, I believe.
Well, you know, there's a really interesting dynamic going on there.
Hmm.
Because you've got the people that created the show,
mm-hmm.
you know, the birth of the show, and then you've got the producers that have no interest really in the UFO phenomenon at all. They're just concerned about ratings.
Right.
So there's this constant battle, I think, going on, internal battle,
right.
with content and script and that sort of thing.
Right.
And that's one of the things that we've, you know, I've always managed to maintain is my independence, fiercely independent. Which has worked both for and against me. But it has allowed me to control 100% of the output of this information,
right.
which I cherish, because I can't imagine someone telling me how to do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, I didn't work with the UFO Hunter team. I worked with the producers. The Hunters team will, you know, Bill and the rest of them, or Ted, whatever, they won't. Probably wouldn't know who I was from Adam,
right.
But you know, the producers would. They, you know, how it's compartmentalized. One team knows one thing, and the other team knows the other. So then you were working with them, right?
Well, I'm listening to. I'm doing some on camera interviews.
Okay.
I'm not actually being interviewed. I'm doing on camera interviews about some cases.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah. So you know.
But okay. So that this.
Oh, by the way. Blue,
go ahead.
While I'm over there, because I'm going to London and Guernsey and maybe Paris.
Okay.
But while I'm there, there's a mathematician who my father has known for quite some time.
Hmm.
And we sent him the symbols that Jim Peniston from the Bentwaters incident back in 1980.
Oh.
We sent this mathematician the symbols, and we didn't tell him their origin.
Hmm.
Can you decipher any of these? And he got back to us in about 2 weeks, and he said, I think I've deciphered one or two.
Hmm.
And it's very interesting conclusions of what appears to be, according to him, a craft in a magnetic orbit, something like this. An unmanned craft in a magnetic orbit, magnetic field orbit, something like this.
That's what he got out of those symbols?
That's what he got out of one of them for sure. But I'm going to interview him in more detail, I think, in London at the end of the month.
Hmm.
Interesting, right?
Going into it as a blind test, certainly. You know, he didn't know where these symbols came from. Although that craft was not unmanned, was it?
We don't know.
Well, not according to Peniston.
Well,
not according to...
Well, remember, there's a couple different incidents that have happened. There's two separate nights.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, Peniston and Burroughs and Cabansag only saw the craft. They did not see anything else.
Okay.
Now, the second night, there's been conflicting stories. The first night, there were no conflicting stories. It's been consistent throughout.
Okay, I'm getting
but
my...
The second night, yeah. There was a lot of other activity that was going on and a lot of different stories.
So maybe there was an unmanned craft and then a manned craft the second night, huh?
Well, there were multiple crafts.
Right.
So...
Interesting. So the Out of the Blue is revamped, and that's already completed. But now Beyond the Blue, at least.
Well, we never officially released it. So I worked on it for over a year.
Uh-huh.
I revamped it. I spent over a year, and I worked really hard. I mean, I did a lot of additional interviews, and I hired a composer to replace all the music, actually. As it turns out, we only did half of the music because we kind of ran out of steam.
Hmm.
We put it all in 16:9 format, widescreen, HD, and replaced some of the graphics and whatnot, and really tight. We took out, I think, 30 minutes of old material and put in, I think, 35 minutes of new material. But then we never officially released it because it might potentially interfere with the release of the new project, which is loosely based on Out of the Blue.
Yeah. So Beyond the Blue is not per se a sequel to Out of the Blue.
Well, it's an entirely different animal, but
okay.
It does cover some of the same material.
Okay.
And some of the shots, like, for instance, Lord Hill Norton, Admiral Lord Hill Norton, is no longer with us.
Right.
Neither is Cooper.
Right.
And a couple of others. So I've had to include some of the interviews from the previous production.
Right.
But it's you know, I don't know if any of your listeners out there saw an Inconvenient Truth, which is a whole film about a PowerPoint. I mean, basically, it's a film on a PowerPoint, right?
Right.
Well, this new film is a movie about the press conference.
The press conference at
the National Press Club, right, in November of last year.
Okay, yeah.
And it's not a monotonous sort of talking head piece. I mean, we really, the military official, whoever is speaking at the podium, I mean, it goes back in time and you actually relive what they're talking about through additional eyewitness testimony, photographic radar, whatever it is.
Right. So it's a dramatization of what actually...
No, not a dramatization. It's actually there's only one dramatization, and that's the Jafari.
Okay.
Case that happened in Tehran, Iran, in 1976.
Okay.
General Jafari, when he was scrambled, and I think it was a Phantom jet to intercept a UFO over Tehran.
The dogfight.
Well, the Air Force, Iranian Air Force, actually did a recreation, I think, in 79 with the original witnesses and planes, and we got a hold of that and we incorporate that in that the case. But other than that, no, it's not a dramatization. It's actual going to interview the witnesses and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. It does sound interesting.
It's really good. It's really high production quality. It's all shot on HD.
Mm-hmm.
Editing. It's a beautiful piece. I think it's going to do well. I really do.
Well, and we still don't know when that's going to be coming out.
It's soon.
Soon. Thank you.
I'm shooting for the fall.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be the winter.
In other words,
it could be a spring release.
we will all be surprised. All right.
I'm gonna make sure it's good. Let's put it that way. I'm gonna make sure I'm really happy with it before it's released.
Do you have a website where people can go and check this out?
I've got some clips from the new movie. I've got some photographs and stuff at outoftheblue.com, and if you Google Out of the Blue, you'll get right to our website. It's the first thing that pops up. But it's outoftheblue.com.
Outoftheblue.com. Very good, and like I say, when you get that thing in the can, as we say in the business, I want you to let me know because I want to tell my listeners. I'm sure they will be very interested in checking out Beyond the Blue or Far Beyond Us or Way Above Us or over our heads or whatever you decide to call it.
What the heck was that?
That was a good one. I like that one. it's just got to be a cloud, like they say in the papers.
And what was the excuse over the airport, O'Hare Airport, was I talked to the witnesses at United Airlines. I mean, I got so close. You know that I offered $10,000 per witness to come forward?
Oh, my God. Mr. James Fox, producer of Out of the Blue. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, it was a real pleasure on your show, and I look forward to doing it again.
Let's do it again. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And please visit my website at ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. And this show, as well as all the four shows, is now archived at WHFR-FM's website. And click on the forum button on WHFR's homepage. And stay tuned to WHFR for the best in alternative music. And I want to thank you for joining us today. And please join us again the first Saturday of each month at 10 a.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
You're listening to 89.3 WHFR Dearborn. Non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College. Good morning. My name is Bill Keith. And last night, Graham Parker was in town. Didn't get a chance to see the show, but I decided to feature a little Graham music anyways to get things started. We'll hear something from his album, Don't Tell Columbus. And this song is called I Discovered America. You're listening to 89.3 WHFR.FM. And we're making waves.
There was smoke up to my eyeballs, poison burned my throat. Said I'd keep on going when everyone said don't. With my bony-chested T-shirt, some stolen guitar licks, navigating.